And welcome to this episode of HBCU. Joining me on the show today is Kyler Franklin, hailing from Fisk University. Kyler, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Man, the pleasure is all mine. And Noop, we're going to jump right into it. And I want to understand, how did you select Fisk University?
So, interesting enough, being from Los Angeles, HBCUs wasn't actually presented to me as an option as much. We were pushed more towards, you know, your UC systems in Los Angeles or more PWI universities like an NYU, Columbia. So it wasn't actually until my senior year that my school counselor actually is a graduate of Fisk University. My school principal is a graduate. And so they encouraged me to go take a visit. And Fisk had a great marketing plan. So what they did was when I got there, they gave me a student host who was from the same part of Los Angeles that I was from, same background, single mother, a freshman. And so he showed me the campus, showed me the city from a perspective of somebody like me. Yeah. And 3 days after, I just said, hey, I'm signing here. This is where I'm going to school. It's no question.
Yeah. I have a daughter at Tennessee State there in Nashville as well. Yeah. So I know that's your stomping ground.
Oh, yeah. I definitely had some fun at TSU.
Hey, so talk to me about your freshman year at Fisk. What was your experience like?
I mean, there was a culture shock coming from Los Angeles. We get into a city. Nashville's a big city, but nothing compared to, of course, L.A.
Right.
So getting there at first was like, OK, this is a culture shock. Everybody talks with a different twang. Let me start getting adjusting. But the weather, that was a big one. You know, the snow, as soon as I seen snow, I definitely was like, I've never seen this before. I've never experienced this.
Yeah.
Didn't know what to do. Had to go to Walmart to buy the right clothing just to go to class. And so the first semester was challenging for sure. By second semester, once settling in, you know, you go home for Christmas break and I couldn't wait to come back. I couldn't wait to actually come back to school. And by the end of freshman year, I was like, I love this place. You know, yeah. I'm having so much fun, good people. And then, you know, think about HBCUs is the ratio of women to men is such a disproportionate that you can't complain when it's 15-1.
Right. So talk to me about some of your experiences at Fisk your freshman year and some of the things that memories you have.
You know, the thing about my freshman year that was really amazing was Fisk did a great job of exposing us to our history and exposing us to our history in the arts. And so if you don't know about Fisk, is we have a very huge art collection worth hundreds of millions of dollars with original Van Goghs and Picassos in it. And so one of the things they do as a freshman is they make you become more culturally sound. And so we had to spend a lot of time learning about our history, about our art, about literature that we wrote. We have people like Nikki Giovanni, who's a graduate alumni of Fisk University. And so that for me, it was amazing freshman year, a lot of those moments. And then I would say, of course, my first homecoming, right? There's nothing like your first homecoming at an HBCU. I think that was probably the most memorable, so much so that my mom actually came the second year, my sophomore year, because she seen how much fun it was.
She wanted to experience it.
So she didn't go to one, so she wanted to experience it.
So what was homecoming like at Fisk?
So my freshman year, funny enough, this is actually right when Gucci Mane, the rapper, had just got out of jail. And so this was like this real huge, crazy buzz because this was like one of his first concerts being released. And when I tell you our gymnasium, which probably only holds maybe like 800 people, but we fit 1,000 in there.
Yeah.
It was rocking from the moment that he touched the stage. That was probably I had never experienced something like it. And then you come outside and you go the next day and being on the yard and you got people grilling and everybody stepping and and I didn't see Greek when I was in L.A. So seeing that, it just was like it was magnetic. I said, this is the greatest marketing. If HBCU show homecoming, everybody's going to want to go.
Hey, so I know you are a member of the greatest fraternity in the world, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated. So
of course.
Talk to me about how you chose Kappa and how Kappa has had an impact on your life.
So I actually have three uncles that are noobs. And so they always parted certain wisdom into me. Like I said, growing up, Greek wasn't necessarily put in front of my face that much. And so I didn't know what it was until I actually got to an HBCU. And then once I decided to actually become a member of Kappa was really once I started reading and looking at people like the Reginald Lewis's of the world, the Bob Johnsons. I always wanted to be in business and finance. And I started to see all the people I already looked up in these fields. They were noobs.
Yeah.
And so a motto is achievement in every field of human endeavor. I'm all about high achieving and achieving. And so I just loved it and it resonated with me and who I was. And so Kappa has blessed my life from everything from the church that I've built, literally couldn't have been built without the noobs. My DJ's a noob. My minister of music's a noob. One of my head of securities is a noob. And so Kappa has played such a role in everything that I've done. Anytime I need to call my frat brothers for something just to lean on or even to make something happen in the community, they're always there. And so yeah. I love Kappa and I just try to hopefully I can give it as much back to it as it's given me.
Right, right. Hey, so I want to understand why you was at Fisk University. Were there any faculty members or staff that had an impact on your life?
Oh, for sure. You know, one of my mentors, his name was Thomas Lavallee. He ran our student activities board while we were at Fisk, and he had a huge impact. He came in my sophomore year, and he really brought a sense of male mentorship to the campus that, not saying it was lacking, but we had more professors and people and faculty that were women than men. And so when he came in, he created a series called Barbershop Talk, where we would literally get into the lobby of the freshmen male dorm and we would just talk as men, talk about challenges, talk about problems, talk about issues. He started Bow Tie Tuesday, so we started to get dressed up. Everybody, you know, it was a fashion show. Everybody had to be fly going to class, and he really started to instill things and principles into us as a young man. And me being from a single mom household, that really I needed it. It was something that I appreciated, having that male mentorship. He was only in his early 30s, graduated TSU, and so he could relate to us, but also have enough wisdom to help us escape a few pitfalls.
Right. So when you left Fisk and you started your professional journey, take me through that transition.
So when I graduated from Fisk, I knew since I was a kid, I always wanted to work in finance. My mom had worked in finance for 20 plus years. And so I got my degree in business concentration in finance, interned every summer. And my last internship was at a company called Morgan Stanley. And so that internship led into a job opportunity right after college. And so when he first started, took us to New York for about a week for training, teaching us how to speak, teaching us how to be professional, write emails, things of that nature. And then I became a financial analyst back out here in Pasadena, California. And, you know, starting just like anybody, you know, it's an adjustment. You think college is hard until you have to really be an adult and show up to work at 6:30 in the morning and things of that nature. So it became a process for sure. But one of the things I loved about it is that I was learning so much that I never learned in the classroom. And I've always had a heart for community. And so the things that I was learning coming to Wall Street every day, being able to take it back to my community, being able to teach kids in my community how to invest and things of that nature was always the blessing for me.
So, and you make an interesting point when you're describing your intern experiences, and a lot of students don't take advantage of that opportunity to go and intern. And of course, you say you did it every summer. Talk to me about the impact that interning had on your professional life.
I'll be honest, it probably played 80% into the success of me getting a job after college and even kind of having a little bit more foresight of what I wanted to do as far as a career track. I encourage every student to go intern every summer as much as possible and potentially in the field that you want to work in. For me, every summer having real world hands-on experience is invaluable. Making those contacts, those networking. So funny enough, one of my mentors, who when I was interning at the company that I'm at now at Merrill Lynch, that mentor actually ended up hiring me 7 years later. And so when he knew me at 18, little did I know at about 25, he'd be giving me a job again. And so I think going and being in the world, networking, learning those skills, it's invaluable. I think people have to, students have to take advantage of it every summer. I my mom wouldn't let me come home without a job. Let's just say that.
So I guess what ignited the fire in you to say, hey, this is what I want to do. This is, I want to intern. I want to get this experience. What led to you making that decision?
Well, when I'm be honest, I was a broke college student. And so, you know, I definitely, you know, I didn't want to have, of course, throughout the year, I had part-time jobs working in department stores. And so I definitely didn't want to do that for my whole summer. Yeah. And so that was part of it. And then the exposure, being able to be actually in the field. Like I said, I knew I wanted to work in finance. So I was 13 years old. And so for me, it was, hey, like, what's the fastest way I can get to Wall Street? What's the fastest way I can get in front of a Bloomberg terminal or trading desk and start really learning how this world works? And so for me, I from the day I came in, I knew I would do it. And then I'm gonna be honest, I have a god brother who's a graduate of Hampton University, and he's 5 years older than me. And he did the same thing. And he kind of laid out the track for me, like, hey, intern every summer, get the job after college, major in business. Like, this is how it goes. And right. So having him definitely helped.
So talk to me about your early career as a financial analyst. What was that experience like, and how did that kind of help shape you for later in your professional career?
I mean, one, it helped develop me to become a morning person. Definitely was not a morning person at college. My Tuesdays and Thursdays, not going to lie, they didn't even start until 2 p.m. That was my earliest class. And so my first job required me, it was an hour and 20 minutes in traffic from my house, and I had to be there at 6:30. So I had to learn really quickly to love getting up when the sun was still down. And so for me, that became such a valuable principle for me, especially now balancing running a church, balancing having a professional career, being able to be a morning person. I get half my day already done by the time most people wake up. So that played a big role. And then meeting a lot of people, you know, finance is connected. I was working in wealth management. So meeting a lot of different people, making those connections, and people became valuable lifelong friends. People ended up becoming donors and supporters of my church and my ministry. And so that being there in this space definitely was a blessing down the road.
Right. And you mentioned your mom a few times during the program. Talk to me about the influence your mom has had on your life and your professional career.
So my mom is my hero. There's no doubt about it. My mom, I actually just texted her yesterday on National Sons Day. She had posted me, and I said, Mom, I will never understand how you did it. She was a single mom out of South Central who literally started a career in finance in Beverly Hills and provided and made things work. Now she is the first Black female vice president at the Lakers. Like, everything about her is about faith and literally taking the next step and never being afraid. And so she was always my inspiration. She always pushed me to believe that I could do whatever I put my mind to, that there was no limits on my life based except for the ones I put in my mind. And so my mom's my hero. You always go hear me. You see how I smile when I talk about her, because right. Yeah, I wouldn't be me without her.
So tell me about when you got the calling to go into the ministry.
So it was an amazing experience. I was 16 years old, actually, and grew up in church my whole life. And I actually went to Steve Harvey's mentoring camp, which is a camp, for those who don't know, for young men who come from single mother households. And it's over Father's Day weekend. And at the time, it was in Dallas. And so we went to his ranch in Dallas. And the night before the last day, I had never heard God speak so distinctively to me. And he said, I have something great for you. I don't know what it is. I'm hearing this faint voice. And so about a week or two later, I'm in church. We're at a second service, you know, old school Baptist. We got 2-3 services in a day. And so I'm at the second service. And by the time the service was over, I walked up to the steps and I said, this is going to sound crazy, but I know what God wants me to do for the rest of my life. And that's preach the word. And that's literally, that day was the day that I accepted my call into ministry at 16.
So talk to me about your journey, because now you have your own church, right? So talk to me about that journey from going into the ministry at 16 years old to the point to where now you have your own church.
So, you know, what's funny is that it was a lot of ups and downs to it. I experienced more church hurt being a minister than I ever did just being a member. And so I had moments where I doubted if this is what I really wanted to do anymore. Of course, I never questioned preaching God's word, but did I want to do ministry from an actual corporal standpoint of building a church? It was never my plan in my 20s. At 28 years old, being a pastor wasn't the idea. But during COVID, what happened was something special is we started doing Bible study on Zoom, just myself and about 8 or 9 of my friends. And God spoke to me in my spirit and said, when you get to 50, start looking for a building. And I'm like, God, that's not happening. And we're not even going to get to 50. This is just me and my friends. We did 50 in 4 months. And he said, okay, well, I said, let's negotiate, God. If I do 75, then I actually look for a building. We did 100 2 months later. And so literally from that point, 6 months from that, we planted the church November 2021, had our first in-person service. About 180, 200 people showed up. And last year we went in person every Sunday and we've been rocking ever since. Wow. Like I said, it wasn't the plan, but God had another idea for me.
So you mentioned something that was at least kind of piqued my curiosity, because I think whether it's the ministry business or whatever, we all probably experienced this. You mentioned about having more hurt in the ministry than you did as a member. Talk to me about those experiences.
Yeah, you know, and it's one thing, it's something that we experience in our churches every day is we experience church hurt. Or, and like you said, even in business, we experience hurt from coworkers, from managers, from supervisors, mentors. And so for me, I had moments where, especially where I felt like I was gifted or that God was giving me unique insight and purpose, where I had people kind of try to box me in. And I think a lot of people felt that in many arenas where you're like, hey, I have more to offer. I have ideas. And I'm not asking for more. I just want to do more. And people try to box you in and say, why don't you just stay here? Just do this and just be okay with that. And that's really what I felt. And so I had a lot of moments in ministry where if I was serving at a church, maybe as a youth pastor, and the second that maybe the youth service became bigger than the normal regular service, or the offering was bigger, it was like, yeah, invite all the people, but we're not going to have you preach, or invite all the people and why don't you just sit in the back? And so it was kind of like, we want your success or your results, but we really don't want you to be in the front forward of doing it. And I'm a humble person. I don't care about the front, but feeling that, feeling boxed in definitely caused some hurt.
So just take me on that journey of, you know, 6 months after you reached 100 members, you went out, found a building to open your own church, but kind of take me through that journey of in the emotional aspect of going through that process of starting your own ministry.
What's so funny is one of the people for a long time in my life, my auntie Omarosa, was actually the first person to tell me about 5-6 years ago, like, hey, you should start a church. Go rent out a banquet hall at a hotel, put some chairs down, get a microphone, and you can do this. And so as soon as I decided in that 6 months that, okay, we're going to go look for a building, she was the first person I called. And I said, auntie, it's actually coming to fruition now. And that process was hard. Thing about LA and Los Angeles is I understand it's inflation everywhere, but it's really inflation here. Things are expensive, values are high. And the LA and certain parts of the city have very strict rules when it comes to even having church. And so finding space was hard. When I finally found a building, the first lease that I signed, talk about church hurt. The trustee of the church, it was a ministry that was kind of dying and they needed the funds to stay afloat. Once she found out that her granddaughter was a member of my church and clearly wasn't going to church there, they canceled my lease within 3 days.
Oh, wow.
And so that experience and that, it had moments where it's like, God, you got me here just for this door to be slammed in my face. But it was really something better on the other side, because 2 months after that, we found an entertainment venue down in the Inglewood area. And I met this gentleman who said, hey, look, I'd usually charge $10,000-$15,000 for to have an event here, but I'll rent it to you for $1,200. I'll let you come have service here for $1,200. And so when I say one door got slammed in my face and walked into something better, literally that's how we started.
Wow. And so what role does faith play in your life, just in general?
It's everything. My faith is my everything. If you know me, it's the reason my church is called Empowered Faith. Our motto is changing the faith of a generation, because I believe that when you have faith and you put your trust truly in God, a lot of these things that you're worried about, stressed out about, it's not that they go away in the physical, but they go away up here, because you know that they're going to be taken care of. I joke with somebody that I stand out front in front of the church every Sunday, because I don't know if anybody's going to show up this Sunday. Is this going to be the Sunday that nobody decides to pull up? And of course that never happens.
Yeah.
But because I trust God that he's going to fill and do the rest. And for me, faith is what keeps me balanced, right? I have seasons and moments where I question and say, is this going to work? The lease getting canceled. The second building we got into, they literally got closed down because it wasn't up to fire code. And it's like, it was like, God, every few months, another challenge. But my faith is what kept me going.
Yeah.
And we're prospering and successful the way we are today because of it.
You mentioned earlier in the program about some of the things you're doing in the community with the fraternity, with your congregation, et cetera. So share with my viewers some of the work that you're doing in the community to make a difference.
Yeah, so if you see, I got a T-shirt on with Face of Nipsey Hussle, a legendary rapper, icon, and businessman in L.A. So I have a financial literacy program that we do out of our church called Hustlenomics, where we teach kids financial literacy based off of his lyrics. So it's relatable and it's fun for them to understand real estate and investing and things of that nature. Then we do a thing called Day of Service about every month. We're headquartered in South Central Los Angeles, where I grew up. And so many people, when you talk about the homeless population in LA, they see just Skid Row, but Skid Row's downtown LA. That's 30 minutes away from South Los Angeles. So we're in South LA every once a month, and we go feed every homeless encampment around our church. There's about 150 trailers lined up on blocks around our church. And so we go and feed every month. And then we do a toy drive. So me and the Noobs last year teamed up and we did a toy drive. I got up in church and I said, we're going to give 1,000 toys. And then something told me the next week, no, we're going to give 2,000. When I tell you, by the time we had the toy drive, we gave over 3,500 toys away to kids, foster kids, kids from single mom households. And so it was, yeah, this is the work that we're doing, and we're trying to do more, and we're going to figure out how to do more.
So just talk to me about why you feel that, you know, obviously being inside of the physical building and delivering the word of God is one component. Why do you feel that it's important to also be in the community and make a difference within the community, more hands-on with those that may not even attend your church?
Because that's really and truly who Jesus calls us to be, is to have a heart for the community and to love people, regardless if they never come into my church and put a tithe or an offering in, if they never show up to one of our events that we have, but it's to go bless people. We see hurting people every day. I see moms who need resources, or I see people who need opportunity, or they need hope. That plate of food or those groceries. We went to a trailer about 2 months ago as we're feeding, and these two little girls, they're about 8 years old. They hop out the trailer, they have no shoes on, and we're offering them food. And then we asked them, we said, how many people's in here? And they said, 6 people are living in here. We went back to our church and brought them groceries. We said, hey, here's waters, here's non-perishable foods. And it's not necessarily about what we gave them, but it's about the inspiration and hope that hopefully we instilled in them to say, hey, you're my neighbor and I still love you, regardless if you ever come into my house or not.
Right, right. So take just about a minute to tell me why you would recommend that someone attend Fisk University.
I recommend somebody goes to Fisk University because, one, it is a smaller HBCU and it's a blessing. It's one of the reasons I went. You have the opportunity to have that hands-on experience with your professors. I would say no class is bigger than about 20 people. And so having that one-to-one ratio opportunity with your professor, being able to catch them at all times when you're in the most difficult classes, is really important. Fisk is a vibe. It is definitely a vibe like any HBCU, being on the yard, Greek life, the parties, all of it is fun. It's an experience that I go back every year for homecoming for because of that. And then I would say the biggest thing, the reason to go to Fisk, is that it's in an amazing city. Nashville, having four HBCUs headquartered there: Meharry, TSU, American Baptist College, having Vanderbilt University, Austin Peay, all these different universities around. You actually get to make, you have this bigger college experience. You have this experience that is actually interconnected, and you'll spend a lot of time on different campuses and meet a lot of different people. And so that's why I would say go to Fisk. It's a beautiful place. I had an amazing time, and I wish I could do it one more time.
Well, Kyler, look, I want to thank you, man, for taking time out your busy schedule to be on the program. I want to congratulate you on all the great work you're doing to make a difference in your community. But I don't want you to leave the show without first receiving our HBCU Lifetime Achievement Award for your continued commitment to historically Black colleges and universities. And we appreciate everything you're doing, Noop, and thank you so much. And to my viewers, thank you for watching this episode of HBCU. I'm your host, D. Brown, CEO. And remember, without you, there's no me.